This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscowen. When Dennis Fricke proposed to my guest, she figured she was marrying a farmer, not his farm. But she soon discovered, after droughts and floods and early frosts and plant and animal diseases, that it's a package deal. When you marry a farmer, you get the farm too. Mary Elizabeth Fricke lives on a farm just outside of Herman, Missouri. There, she and her husband farm some 400 acres and raise hogs. In spite of the long hours and the ongoing responsibilities of the farm, Mary Fricke manages to find time to write, something she's been doing since she was a young girl. Her first book has just been published about her life on their farm, and it's entitled Dino, Godzilla, and the Pigs. Mary Fricke has always lived within 10 miles of the Missouri River. She has watched the river rise and fall, but never has she seen the amount of devastation that this year's floods have caused.
It's curious because right now we are 4 miles from the river, and we're in the hills. And in our immediate area, it's kind of hard to believe that there's a flood going on less than, 5 miles away from us. But when you get into Herman, which is, right on the edge of the river, you don't even get into town before the stench and the everything is just brown. I mean, there is no green in Herman in the lower, along the Friend Creek.
What does it smell like? What does it smell like?
Something that's been in the refrigerator for about 2 months that you forgot to take out.
The whole area smells like that?
Oh, yeah. The stench is, somebody told me it smelled like death. I said, yeah. Because there is no, the foliage, even the trees have an odd color to a certain point, where they sit in water for days. There is no grass, no flowers. I mean, the city park is along Friend Creek, and it's usually, this time of year green and lush, and people are playing around in there, and it's mud and just brown and ugly. I mean, even there's nothing there anymore.
What impact has the flood had on your farm, and have you and your husband been able to plant crops?
Well, the crops, the majority of the crops that we had planted were flooded. We have lost approximately 85% of what we had, and that includes the crops that were planted and those who weren't. That's a land percentage.
Is that mostly corn?
Yeah, we hadn't really gotten into the beans. I mean, we were so late with corn. There was so much rain that it was the middle of May before we even began to plant corn. And we had gotten in a couple hundred acres. And we have lost all but 50 or 60 acres of that, I guess. And most of what we have is here along the road where we live, the rest of it. And there is just a little on high ground, maybe. Well, I'm going to take that back. I think there's about 50 acres along the high ground, and then what we have here, which would be another, we have about 100, I guess. But that was all we got planted, as opposed to planting like 400.
Now it's mid-August, and let's say the weather clears up and you have a good dry spell into the fall. Can you plant anything? Is there enough time?
Wheat. It's too late for anything else.
Now, you mentioned that you haven't been able to plant about 85% of your crops. What are you going to do this winter? What are you going to do about cash?
Well, we are hoping that we have enough stored, which we do have a small bit, a very small bit stored from last year. And we have enough. We do have that 100 acres yet. And we're hoping that will help us be able to feed the hogs, without having, and be able to keep them until, they will sell at a fairly decent price. Then we will be able to live off the hogs. It will still be a lean year. We'll have to really, cut back because we have, a lot of land and operating expenses, and they must be paid. But, so everything else will be cut back.
And President Clinton just signed a multi-billion-dollar relief bill. How will that affect you?
Not as much as what he would hope. Because this kind of devastation is so broad that by the time that money is distributed, no one is really going to get that much. It's the destruction is too big. I don't think the United States could afford, you know, to hand over the kind of money it's going to take to repair this.
Do you know how much it would take to repair your farm?
Oh, well, no, at this point, because most of our land has still got water on it. We really have not been able to get out there and see. You know, for us, it's cleanup. It's not, you know, the repair of buildings and machinery or anything. We were lucky in that respect, you know, in living miles away from the edge of the river, all we had was the farmland. And we're also lucky in the fact that a lot of the land that we rent is, that we farm is rented area. So we're going to have help from the landlords. But most of that land is still underwater or simply too muddy to get out in there to figure out just what we're going to have to do. Because, you know, with the river comes trash. You know, every imaginable kind of trash there is comes down the river in a flood. And then when the water goes away, that trash is left behind. So we may go out there in the field sometime next spring and find ourselves trying to dig up a piece of an old car out in the middle of the field. I know right now, just from driving down the roads, we can look out there and we can see logs and pieces, you know, from trees, these big, huge chunks that it's going to take the strength of a tractor to pull out of the field, you know, that were never there before. You have torn down fences, so we're going to be finding barbed wire and things like that out in the middle of the fields that were never there before.
Could you describe for us, even as you leave your farm and you travel around Herman, Missouri, what the road conditions are like, what you see other farmers having to deal with?
Well, the roads really are the largest problem. Many of our roads have been washed out. Major highways have had the pavement just destroyed. The pavement is gone. And we're just across the river on 19, they have dumped truckload after truckload after truckload of rock into a hole, or I think there are several holes there actually, but at one point they said that the rock actually disappeared. They didn't know where, that the hole was so deep that they could not see where it went. And as you drive down the road, you know, you see this driving is very hard because the water has washed over the road. It has washed ruts in the road, and it has washed, like, churned, literally, so that the small gravel isn't really on top anymore. You get the rocks that are underneath, if they're there. If they're not there, you've got big holes that you have to either dodge or get through very carefully.
Are there levees around?
Yeah, but the majority of the levees have broken. And when the levee breaks, the force of the water coming through is so tremendous. It's like, I keep thinking Niagara Falls, but I imagine, you know, the force, it's comparable to that, maybe even worse. It's just, it's like a tidal wave just comes in, and there is destruction. You know, the water, there's no force like the force of that water, you know, as it hits. And it can hit the wall of a building with enough strength to just tear the building out, you know, just completely destroy the building just by the force of the way the water hits.
Are you concerned that there will be more destruction from the flood? For instance, has most of the destruction happened when the levees broke?
No. When water stands in buildings for days, as it did, it destroys. You know what happens to anything that sits in water for a while. It just literally dissolves within itself. And we have buildings that have been in water for, you know, days at a time. So there is going to be permanent wood damage. And some of those buildings, if they were in the wake, like, say, of a levee break or something like that, they may have been pushed off their foundation. You know, they may, all of those buildings are going to have to be checked out to make certain that they are safe for people to travel in. There is, even if you have, like, water in your basement, your floor buckles in your house. So, you know, when that water goes away, you have a floor that, you know, well, maybe you replace it, maybe you will deal with the lumps for the rest, you know, for however long you can handle that. And we have a lot of land that has been underwater. There's been a tremendous road destruction. So we don't know, you know, once the water goes away, how many holes there are out there underneath that water. I know in the flood of 73, there were holes along the Missouri River levees in places that they have never been able to fill. Hmm. Those holes still exist. Now, I'm sure they may have gotten filled up with this flood. I mean, it's possible that the water came in and washed enough stuff in to finally fill them up. But they're going to leave a hole someplace else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of that. There's going to be some places that will never be repaired. It's better to just tear them down. Or, you know, there will... And like the land, too, we don't know. Until this water disappears and we can actually get out there on foot and walk through it, we don't know the extent of the destruction. Mm-hmm. And some of it won't be able to be repaired. Some of it will be minor. You know, it's a little scary that way. It's like I say, we're right in the middle of it right now. We don't know.
Right.
You know, we're still sitting here waiting for the water to just go away. Mm-hmm. You know.
So. Have you seen evidence that the water is actually receding?
Yeah, it is. It's going down. Yeah, you can see that right away, where it goes down. And even if it comes back again, you can tell how much it has come back because it leaves a different color every time. I mean, you can look at the buildings and you can see, because that moisture, you know, is still in the buildings. It's like in the trees, you know, the bottom of the tree, so many feet up the trunk, you can see where that tree stood in water for a while. And on the ground, the dirt itself is a different color. You know, how it is when it's wet, you know, as dry ground versus wet ground, it leaves a different color. So it's easy to see where it's been. It also tends to leave trash behind, you know, a line of trash. You can go out and look like where the water was to a certain point. It washed all this stuff up, and when it started to go away, it left just a line of dead limbs and trash and garbage and whatever else it washed in that stays there. And then, you know, it slowly washes it back down.
Now, as farmers, you've been through other weather problems, weather crises before. There was the drought of the late 80s, and other times as well. And you say one of the biggest hazards of being a farmer is the stress of not being in control. Is that something that you and your husband and other farmers have to constantly fight up against?
Oh, sure, because you can't control the elements. You can't control Mother Nature, and you can't control the prices. You know, it's a gamble. You put your crops in, or you raise your animals, and you pray that the price will be good whenever it comes time to sell. And you know, if you have a lot of expenses and you're raising a family, it puts a lot of stress on you, because you know that whether you sell at a decent price or not, you've got bills you're going to have to pay. You know, and you're going to have to somehow manage to get those bills paid.
Are you concerned that farmers like yourself and your husband, small family farmers, will just abandon their farms? They're going to say, this has just been too much?
No. That's the spirit of the farmer. There are some. There are a few who have, you know, who say, I can't deal with it anymore. There are always a few, but the majority of them, no. They will not, because farming is in their blood. They're going to say, we'll dig in, and next time we'll know how to deal with it better. You know, it's just, my husband is fourth or fifth generation farmer, and he's not going to leave. He's already working strategy for next year, you know, in ways to figure out how we can almost benefit from what's happened to us this year.
Can you even imagine life off a farm?
No. No, I do not want any other life. Absolutely.
Well, I want to take a very short break, and then I want to talk some more. My guest today is Mary Elizabeth Fricke, and she's a hog farmer and a writer, and we're talking to her from her home in Herman, Missouri, and she's right in the middle of the flood devastation. And the book that she has just written is called Dino, Godzilla, and the Pigs, My Life on Our Missouri Hog Farm. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is writer and farmer Mary Elizabeth Fricke. When you married your husband, Dennis Fricke, what did you imagine farm life would be like?
Quiet. I'm kind of a quiet person. I like my peace and my privacy. I never imagined that I would be driving a tractor. I knew that I would be chasing hogs. I mean, I did that as a kid, and I knew that there are times, you know, but I didn't expect to do it on a daily basis. And driving the equipment is something, as well as it said in the book, it took me a long time to get to where I could drive the combine. I still can't drive the big farm trucks because I've never learned to properly handle a standard shift, you know, so I can't do any of the hauling or anything like that. But I don't know. It's a quiet, peaceful life, you know, for the most part. And I guess that's what I saw more than anything. Remembering, you know, when I was a child and we lived, you know, in the bluff right above the river, you know, it was really a secluded place. And I remembered from that the quiet life that we had then. And I guess that's what I expected this would be.
Well, tell us when you first started working with your husband, what your first real job was, what first responsibility he gave you.
Oh, I was to learn how to give the shots and to trim the teeth and tails on the piggies.
Do you get attached to your hogs?
No. No, you can. I mean, it's possible. We have had a few in the area that we felt special to, but usually they're not really here long enough to distinguish, you know. As soon as they reach their selling weight, they're gone, and there are so many of them that every now and then there's one or two that kind of catches your eye and hangs, and you know, becomes a little special, but not like I do my puppy dogs.
Well, I was going to say there must be a difference between barn animals and house pets.
Yeah, there is. I mean, dogs, you know, pigs rather do have personalities. They do have facial expressions, and they are not dumb. They are extremely intelligent animals. Their main flaw is the fact that they're stubborn. You know, they're just really bullheaded, and they're like, they want to do what they want to do, and if they have a place where they want to be, you're not going to run them out of that place unless they let you. You know, they're really bullheaded creatures, but they're not dumb.
Now, how many hogs do you have?
Well, at this point, oh my. We maintain somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 in a year's time.
Now, were they affected by the flood at all, or?
No. We live far enough away that they weren't. The only effect that we have had is that the place where we loaded the hogs to take them into sale was flooded. And it will be quite some time before it's repaired enough that we can sell them there. So we have to go several miles in another direction.
Let me just shift gears here slightly and talk a little bit about your writing. How do you find time to write when you're farming?
I write at night.
Every night?
Basically, yeah. As often as possible. Sometimes it may be 7 days a week, and then I might skip two or three. In the spring and the fall, it's less. If, you know, when Dennis needs me out in the field 10, 12 hours a day, you know, obviously I'm too exhausted to write at night. But then I usually have something handy that I can edit or some research or something that I can do, and I take that along with me. And if I have time during the day, I try to work on that out there.
Out there meaning out in the field?
Yeah, on the edge of the field. I usually have a little bit of time where I have to sit and wait for him for one reason or another. Or sometimes, you know, I just need to rest. And like writing to me is breathing. And it's like taking a long, slow breath sometimes.
Well, I'd like to have you read a section from your book. It's a description. Why don't you read it for us?
A 10-acre field at the base of the valley separates us from Dennis' parents' home. Other houses far and near dot the hillsides. There is a packing house about a mile down the road that draws a good deal of traffic during the day, but for the most part it is quiet here. The only sounds to be heard most of the time are the humming of the farm machinery in the distance, the lowing of cattle, and the protesting squeal of a hog as our 1,500 herd shifts itself into new alignment. I can tell the sound of my husband's pickup truck, are my father-in-law's, or either the farm trucks when they start up. I know without looking which tractor is being used and when my husband is grinding feed. I can hear the school bus a mile away, and I know the sound of the feed truck when it comes to make a delivery. On summer evenings, the whippoorwills and the katydids among the trees serenade us. Toward daybreak, I am often awake by the yipe of coyotes and the neighborhood dogs' answering howl. We sometimes hear a screech owl nearby, though we have not heard one recently. After dark, we often sit in the yard barbecuing a late supper, and as we watch the fireflies under the stars, not a car passes.
I'm curious how the flood has changed the sounds that you hear. A passage from your book really describes the sounds of farm life, and with the flood, how does it sound different?
Well, it's a lot quieter. I think the thing that part of our farmland that went under, I know when we went out there, there was absolute stone silence. I mean, you don't hear the frogs creaking anymore. You don't hear the birds singing. You don't hear the animals. You know, usually if you sit quietly, you can hear animals kind of rushing through the woods and everything. The animals are gone at this point. They've gone to higher ground. If they survived, a lot of them haven't survived. And it's, you don't hear the birds. You know, the happy sounds, they're not there anymore. So, and I know this year that we won't be hearing too many grain dryers in the area. We won't be hearing a lot of tractors in the area, you know, big trucks. So, one thing that happened that was when Herman was flooded, the road that we live on is about the only road in this area that will connect the two major highways that go into Herman. So they detoured the traffic right past our house. And for a week there, what I wrote in the book was about the opposite of what we were hearing. We could not hardly pull out of our driveway without cars going by. It was just continual traffic up and down our road. And that made it a lot noisier and a lot dustier.
Well, I thank you very much, Mary Elizabeth Fricke, for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Mary Elizabeth Fricke's book is called Dino, Godzilla, and the Pigs. I'm Marty Moscowane, and this is Fresh Air.